North Korean border guard. I see a big sign with big black letters. Attendance is mandatory in Niagara. I don't want to create this atmosphere of fear that you better go or you're going to get in trouble. So I don't want to contravene any rules, but in CD, that's not the way I like to give any type of advice. Anyway, this is a share that their band thought would be helpful. You know, we've been doing it for a few years. On an overview of the Chumash and go over the basic ideas of the Parsha and Yomim Tovim and various other things as well, as you know. Although obviously the bulk of your day is spent on the Torah Shabbat Peh, the Oral Law, but the Oral Law's foundation is the text of the Chumash and the commentaries on the Chumash, and of course those commentaries themselves integrate a lot of the Torah Shabbat Peh, and indeed we sometimes think when we graduate to a so-called higher level of learning that we don't need the lower level. That's a tremendous mistake. We need Chumash all the time. In fact, the one obligation of Talmud Torah that is codified in the Shulchan Aruch is that everyone has to learn the Parsha of the week and read it twice, together with the Aramaic translation. That's when they used to speak Aramaic, but the equivalent would be the Rashi's commentary or another translation as well, and that is a codified field. So if you were to say, I can only learn one thing the entire week, what you would actually pick is Chumash. That would be the mandatory thing for you to do. And the same thing is true with Mishnayos. We sometimes think, oh, once I do Gemara, Mishnayos is for kids. No, that's not at all the case. The person needs to constantly learn Chumash, constantly learn Mishnah, and then you'll see that when you have a good foundation in Chumash and in Mishnah, you'll be able to learn Gemara in a much, much greater level of fluidity and facility and the like. So you never like leave one level when you progress to another level, but rather you have to be involved in all of the levels all of the time. So this is Chumash again, and if I know people don't think it's below their dignity, Chumash of course comes from God. The Oral Law also comes from God. Chumash is the intermediated words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it certainly is going to be worth our time. But what I want to talk about today is not necessarily the Parsha, since today is Rosh Chodesh. I want to talk a little bit about what the Torah says about the Jewish calendar and about what is special about Rosh Chodesh, and then what is special about this Rosh Chodesh. We know if you go back to Perek Yud Beis in Shmos, the very first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people at the time of the Exodus is the mitzvah of HaChodesh HaZelachem, meaning the sanctification of the new moon. And that is the idea that the Jewish calendar is a lunar calendar. It is not a solar calendar. The definition of a month is the average time that the moon revolves around the earth, which is around 29 and a half days. Again, the fraction. And since there is no such thing in any calendar as a half day, so if you multiply 12 lunar revolutions, 29 and a half times 12, that will give you around 354 days, which we get by alternating our months 30, 29, 30, 29, 30, 29. So that is why the normal length of a Jewish year is 354 days. That represents 12 lunar revolutions around the earth, each revolution being approximately 29 and a half, and we get 354 by alternating a 30, 29, 30, 29. A year in Halacha is not an astronomical event. Think about it, it's very, very interesting, because a solar calendar and a lunar calendar work with opposite suppositions. The definition of a solar year is the amount of time it takes, well, the way it was traditionally described, for the sun to go around the earth. We would say the earth going around the sun, okay, be this as it may, and that is 365 and a quarter, and I'm being approximate. Now, what is the meaning of a solar month? A solar month is meaningless. There is no such astronomical phenomenon in a month. That is simply taking the year and dividing it by 12. So when you base your calendar on the sun, it is the year that is the fundamental unit, and the month is nothing more than a fraction of the year. When it comes to the moon, it's exactly the opposite. There is no such thing as a lunar year. there is nothing that happens with the moon over a year. The only thing that happens with the moon is a monthly cycle, and a lunar year, a Jewish year, is nothing more than 12 monthly cycles. So it's important to realize that in a solar year, the basic unit is a year, and a month is simply dividing that by 12. In a lunar year, the fundamental unit is a month, and the year is simply multiplying it by 12. But let's go back to the most basic idea, that there is a mitzvah in the Torah that the Jewish people establish the months of their year by the moon rather than the sun. And in fact, in the time of the temple, you know, there was a well-known ceremony where witnesses, we didn't even use a calendar, witnesses would come to Jerusalem and they would have to testify that they saw the little crescent of the moon at the beginning of the month. And only based on those witnesses would the Sanhedrin, the great Supreme Court of 71 judges, they would proclaim that this is the new month. And the Talmud even says, even if astronomically they got it wrong, all of the holidays would be based on that error. Now, since we don't have a temple, and we don't have a Sanhedrin, so eventually it was replaced by a fixed calendar. But in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't use a fixed calendar. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they used the testimony of witnesses. That is why in the diaspora outside of Israel, the holidays had to be 2 days. Why was that so? Because astronomically, Rosh Chodesh could either be day 30 or day 31 from the last sighting of the moon. And if you were outside of Israel, you wouldn't necessarily get the news in time, so you had to keep it 2 days. Today, based on a calendar, so the theoretical need for 2 days actually does not exist today. But the Gemara tells us in the Seches Beya, the Seches Rosh Hashanah, that the Chachamim made an enactment to keep the old custom. That is why Rosh Hashanah is the only holiday that is 2 days even in Israel. Because if you think about it, Rosh Hashanah is the only holiday that is on the first of the month. So even within Israel, they didn't always get the news in time. Every other Chag on the 15th of the month, they would hear about it on time. That's why Sukkot is one day in Israel. But Rosh Hashanah, outside of Jerusalem itself. Of course, the big question you could ask is, so why in Jerusalem do you have to keep 2 days? That's an interesting question. But at least in the rest of Eretz Israel, the idea of 2 days for Rosh Hashanah is a very, very clear. Yeah.
So just go back a little bit on your point that we alternate 29 and 30 days.
Yep.
We have a fixed calendar. Why not just make it 29 days straight? And there's going to be a little bit of shift anyways. It's a little more. Why did they decide to alternate
The reason is because we want a year. We want a Jewish year. Since the calendar is based on the moon, we want the Jewish year to be the total duration of 12 lunar revolutions. And we want the calendar to reflect that number of days. And since the lunar revolutions are around 29 and a half, so it's only by alternating will you get a 354. Now, it's more complicated than that, and the reason it's more complicated is that although the ideal normal Jewish year alternates between 30 and 29, which gives you 354, there are 2 months of the year that the calendar allows to either be 230 days, Cheshvan and Kislev. If they're both 30, you get a 355-day year. Or they could be both 29, and then you get a 353-day year. It's like an accordion. Cheshvan and Kislev, I mean, you know, we know this, you know, just looking at every calendar. Cheshvan and Kislev can either be, instead of a 29-30, it can be 29-29, which gives you 1 day less. Or instead of a 29-30, it could be a 30-30, which gives you 1 day more. So a standard Jewish year, I'm not even getting to leap years yet, can be anywhere between 353 and 355. Why do we have that flexibility? We that flexibility was built into the calendar primarily because when the rabbis made the calendar, it really was a very ingenious work. They didn't want Rosh Hashanah to fall on certain days of the week. And whenever a 354 calendar cycle would cause Rosh Hashanah to fall on one of your bad days, I'll discuss what those bad days are, they had to adjust the calendar so it would either be before the date or after the date. And that is why you have this variable length. The three bad days of Rosh Hashanah are Rosh Hashanah cannot be, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, cannot be on Sunday, meaning Saturday night, Sunday. It cannot be on Wednesday, meaning Tuesday night, Wednesday. This is the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And cannot be on Friday. Okay, Rosh Hashanah cannot be any of those 3 days, the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Why is that so? Why do we care when that is? So here is our problem. The problem is not so much Rosh Hashanah, the problem is Yom Kippur. Let's imagine if Rosh Hashanah would be on, let's take Wednesday and Friday, Sundays and Thursday. If Rosh Hashanah would be on Wednesday, so what day would Yom Kippur be? Because Rosh Hashanah is Wednesday, Thursday, so Yom Kippur is going to be Friday. No, it would be Friday. If the first day of Rosh Hashanah is Friday, it's Wednesday, Yom Kippur is going to be Friday. We don't want Yom Kippur and Shabbos to be one after the other. And the reason is because if, God forbid, somebody died, if we have to bury them on a Yom Tov, we can do that. But we're not allowed to bury them on a Shabbos or a Yom Kippur. So we don't want a situation where a dead body would have to lie unattended for 2 days. So if you don't want Yom Kippur to be on a Friday, you can't have Rosh Hashanah on a Wednesday. Now, by the same token, if Rosh Hashanah would be on a Friday, Yom Kippur would be on a Sunday. So since you don't want Yom Kippur to either be on a Friday or on a Sunday, Rosh Hashanah cannot be on a Wednesday or a Friday. And that is, and when that's going to happen, based on the 354, you got to readjust the day. Now, that doesn't explain the first thing. Why can't Rosh Hashanah be on a Sunday? That's a totally different problem. If Rosh Hashanah would be on a Sunday, the last day of Sukkot, I'll tell you another way back, it would be on a Shabbos. The last day of Sukkot is Hoshana Rabbah. And Hoshana Rabbah is a very, very important mystical ceremony that maybe we'll discuss when we get closer to that date. That is the beating of the willow. And if it would be on Shabbos, we wouldn't be allowed to do it. And this is such an important ceremony, more so than Lulav. Because we allow Sukkot to be on Shabbos, even though I don't take the Lulav. But this is such an important ceremony that the whole calendar was changed, so it shouldn't be, okay? So the Hebrew word for these are called Dechios. Dechios means we push off Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so that's so a regular Jewish year, again, is based on the moon, and it can be 353, 354, 355. The 354 is the alternate 30-29, 30-29, 30-29. The 355 is when Cheshvan and Kislev both are 30. And the 353 is when Cheshvan and Kislev are both 29. Now, why were those the 2 months that were chosen? I really don't have a clear answer for, but they chose 2 months to be their pressure points to expand the month, the year, or to contract. But let's go now. There is one other issue in the calendar, but I don't want to spend too much time on the technicalities of the calendar because it is complicated, and at some point we even have to get into arithmetic, which is not my favorite. I don't say mathematics, just arithmetic, but it's not my favorite subject. And that is, although the Jewish calendar is largely based on the moon, it does have a solar adjustment. And that is because of the following consideration. The Torah requires that Passover, Pesach, be in the springtime, in the spring. Now the problem is that in a pure lunar calendar, Pesach is going to get earlier and earlier every year. Let's say year one, when they left Israel, I have to go back and check. Let's say Pesach was April 1st. Had there been a second of Halloween? Well, since a lunar year is only 354, and a solar year is 365, every Hebrew date is going to get 11 days earlier vis-a-vis the solar date. So if in year one, the 15th of Nisan is April 1st, in year two, it's going to be, you know, March 20th or 21st. Year three, it's going to be March 10th. It's going to get earlier, earlier, earlier. Eventually, what's going to happen is, Pesach is going to be in the winter. But the Torah does not allow Pesach to be in the winter. The Torah says Pesach must be in the spring. But the seasons are based on the sun. They're not based on the moon. So how do we resolve that problem? So this is where we get the concept of a leap year, that 7 out of 19 years in the Jewish calendar, we actually add, whenever Pesach is getting a little bit too early, we add an extra month called the second Adar that pushes Pesach late. See? And therefore, that is unlike, for example, the Islamic calendar, the Muslim calendar, our friends across the street, they have a pure lunar calendar without a solar adjustment. And that is why the fast of Ramadan, a fast from sunrise to sundown, can occur any time of the year. It could be Ramadan in the summer and eventually in the winter. Now, of course, if I would be Muslim, I would like it that way because I would much rather have a Ramadan fast in the winter than in summer. The summer is number one, a longer day, it's a hotter day, and you got to keep sorry for the Arab construction workers, if they're observant, that they can't take a drink of water when they're working in the hot sun, so they're better off without the solar adjustment. But we require that it be adjusted, and again, the way the calendar works, it's 7 out of 19. Now, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there was no fixed calendar. They would do leap years on an ad hoc basis. The Sanhedrin would actually decide, Pesach is a little early this year. Now, this is the source of that common expression you always hear. People always say, oh, Rosh Hashanah is early this year, or Rosh Hashanah is late this year. Well, not really. Rosh Hashanah is always the first of Tishrei. What, we're during Rosh Hashanah in Elul this year? No, it's going to be the first of Tishrei. Pesach is always the 15th of Nisan, but it's early vis-a-vis the Nisan. Okay, so this is kind of the very, very basic information you need to know. Let me give you a little, I don't want to call it trivial pursuit, because nothing in Torah is trivial, but a nice little brain teaser you could pull on a relative or a friend. And that is, when somebody reaches their 13th birthday, they are bar mitzvah. Now, you'll see in the Shulchan Aruch the phrase, you got to be 13 and a day. That's what it says, 13 and a day. So people always ask the question, I was a shul rabbi for a lot of years, people ask, well, can I be called to the Torah on my birthday? It's my 13th birthday, but it's not a day. Well, the answer actually is, the day of your birthday is already a day, because you finished 13 years of your life the day before your birthday. So on the day of your birthday, that is the start of a new year, okay? And you don't need a whole day, you just have to enter that new year. So yes, you can celebrate your bar mitzvah on your Hebrew, not your English, on your Hebrew 13th birthday. Now, let's say you have two boys, and is there any way that the boy that was born later can actually become bar mitzvah before the boy that was born earlier? In other words, when can you have a younger child becoming a bar mitzvah earlier than an older child? You think it's impossible, right? Because each one becomes bar mitzvah on their 13th birthday. But based on the leap year, it's entirely possible. Because what is the halacha like this? What is the halacha that if two boys are born in a leap year, and one boy is born, let's say, the 20th of Adar Aleph, and the other boy is born the 5th of Adar Beis. Now, the boy that was born the 20th of Adar Aleph is older than the boy that was born the 5th of Adar Beis. But 13 years later, the year of their bar mitzvah, it's not a leap year. There's only one Adar. So when it's one Adar, your birthday is in that month. So the guy that was born the 20th of Adar Aleph, his birthday is 20th Adar. The one that was born the 5th of Adar Beis, his birthday is the 5th Adar. He will have his bar mitzvah 3 weeks earlier than the other. That's a nice little brain teaser, where a child that was born later will actually have his 13th birthday earlier if they were both born in a leap year, and the younger child was born in an earlier part of the second Adar, and the first child was born in a later part of the first Adar. Okay. So now, be it as it may, and of course, when you get into leap years, there's all sorts of questions. If there's a yahrzeit, for example, if somebody has a parent who died in a regular year, so when do you keep the yahrzeit in a leap year? Do you keep it both months, the second one, the first one? Truth of the matter is, this is one of the halachas, that no matter what you do, you have not done anything wrong, because there are opinions regarding having every single, or maybe you put it another way, no matter what you do, you've done something wrong. Either way, because there are opinions that allow every single variation. The only way you could certainly absolutely be yotzei is to keep to your sense, and some people indeed do that. But let's go back to the most basic question. Okay, so we went through a little bit of the peculiarities of the calendar. Why do Jews look at the moon and the Umot HaOlam, the nations of the world, use the sun? What is so symbolic? What is so significant about the moon that that represents a Jewish people? And there are many, many understandings of why we are moon people. We are not sun people. We are not people of the sun. We are people of the moon. And I'll just mention two ideas that the Midrash tells us. One is a metaphorical idea. Well, this is not a scientific statement. This is a metaphorical visual statement. That is, the sun seems to be vanquished by the powers of darkness. Now, I understand that scientifically that's circular. It gets dark because the sun goes down. But visually, poetically, when darkness comes, the sun runs away. Again, poetically, that's what a human being sees. The sun is vanquished by darkness. The moon is not defeated by darkness. The moon is able, again, you understand that these are metaphors based on what we see. It's not trying to describe something scientific. That is, the moon survives even the powers of darkness. That is the Jewish people. The Jewish people, God is telling us, are going to be persecuted. The Jewish people are going to suffer. People will want to destroy us. But like the moon, we will have the koach to endure a long darkness until the eventual redemption. And then indeed, the Torah tells us that the light of the moon shall become like the light of the sun. We say this when we sanctify the moon every month, Kiddush Levana, and the light. But then the other reason is even more significant, because it gives the explanation of that. That is, and this is scientifically true, the fundamental difference between the moon and the sun is the sun generates its own light through nuclear reactions. Like the sun is a star, the sun generates light. The moon has no light of its own. The moon is nothing more than a vehicle for reflecting the light of the sun. That is what a Jew is. A Jew, ideally, is not filled with ego and arrogance and a sense of my own power. What is the goal of the life of the Jew? That I should reflect in my life the glory of HaKadosh. Now, these two explanations. One is that the moon can endure even in the darkness. And the other is the moon reflects the light of God. I hope you can see these two explanations are connected to each other. Because what gives us the strength to persevere through darkness and persecution is that it's not up to me, it's not up to us. It's because God's light hopefully is shining through us, giving us strength, giving us those abilities. So the moon is a very, very important point. And of course, a third explanation, it's all connected, is the moon goes through waxing and waning phases, right? The waxing phase, the moon grows bigger, 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 till the 15th of the month, the midpoint, when it's a full moon, that's called the waxing phase. And then it goes smaller, 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 the waning phase till it disappears. And right when you think it's gone, it pops out of you. That's Jewish history. We have periods of ascent and periods of decline. But as difficult as things are, even after the Holocaust or whatever, the moon will come. And that is why we make such a deal about the moon, because the moon is indeed what we are, the ability to endure the darkness, the ability to come back and be renewed even after diminishment, and the hope that your life will reflect the glory of our Kodesh Baruch, as opposed to being filled with your ego and your arrogance.
Is there something significant about the fact that we orbit the moon from the sun, and the moon orbits us?
Yes, that is a very interesting point. Now, of course, before Copernicus, at least the non-Jewish world did believe that the sun went around the earth as well. What Chazal believes is a bit of a controversy, but there is some that there is some rights that Chazal understood what Copernicus established. But I think, once again, that is significant, because the moon, once again, you see, is always subservient to something greater than itself. Number one, its light source is the sun, and number two, it revolves around the earth. And really, that may suggest that I, as a Jew, should always be humble and subservient, primarily to the light of God, but even to my fellow human beings. Meaning to say, I should be here for the service of other people. Okay, that's a very interesting and important idea. That the less ego we bring to our lives, the better. Every person has a certain amount of ego, to be sure. But the MS is that when a person is filled with their own guile and their own arrogance, they cannot be a complete servant of Hashem. And so that is why we are moon people as opposed to sun people, but we do have to have the leap year adjustment to bring the lunar calendar in synchronization with the sun. Okay. Now, by the way, why is that important? In other words, we'll talk about it when you get closer to Pesach, obviously. But why is it so important that Pesach be in the spring? Like, who cares? So the Maral of Prague is a very fascinating point. Very, very interesting point. The Maral of Prague says that the idea here is that what happens in the physical earth is an expression of the spiritual vibrations that appear in Shemayim. Meaning the earth itself responds. Now, Pesach is supposed to be a time of redemption, rejuvenation. The earth itself responds by being liberated from the dormancy of the winter. So if you're having Pesach and that's not, and the earth isn't there yet, that's a sign that the spiritual vibrations aren't there. So you've got to coordinate your lunar date with your solar date, because that tells you when the spiritual kochos of liberation and redemption and rebirth are there. Now you may ask the question, well, wait a second here, what about Australia? What about South Africa, the Southern Hemisphere? There, Pesach will not necessarily be in the spring. The seasons are flipped over. No, but the answer is simple, I think. The answer is that spiritual powers enter the world from Eretz Israel. So when it's spring here, it becomes the time of rejuvenation, redemption, and growth, even if it then has to go down to South Africa or Australia or whatever it is. When it's redemption here, it is redemption everywhere. Things spread as spring here. Okay? So this is what Rosh Chodesh is about. Rosh Chodesh, therefore, since the Jewish people are compared to the moon, the renewal of the moon after its dormancy and darkness is our renewal, our rebirth, our capacity to achieve new levels. And as low as we may have sunk, we can have his chatzos, that means renewal and the like. Now this is true for every Rosh Chodesh. And if you delve into Hasidic and Kabbalistic literature, one of the things you try to focus on is how every single month has a unique twist. Rosh Chodesh Adar is not the same as Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and every month has its own message and its own thing. Rav Sadok writes about this, but the very famous Hasidic sefer, the Vinei Sosko, you may have heard about, that is devoted to that that theme. So based on that, this month is of course a very special month. This is called the month of Elul, and it is the last month of the Jewish year. It is the month before Rosh Hashanah, before the new year. And our sages tell us that Elul is an acronym, it's an abbreviation, for a verse in Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, that says, Ami v'dodi v'dodi li, which means, I am for my beloved, I pledge myself to my beloved, meaning the Jewish people are speaking about God, and my beloved pledges himself to me. Therefore, Elul is about love and connection to the Almighty, because we're about to enter, that's a very, it's a funny thing in a way, because why do I need this love right now? Because we're about to enter a very tough and demanding period in some ways. Rosh Hashanah. God judges us. Who will live? Who will die? God gives us a report card for all of these different sins that we may have done and the good deeds that we did as well. That's very scary. That could give a person fear, trepidation, pessimism, depression. What does God say? Don't worry. I love you. I care about you. We have to go through this process because we all have to become better people. But it's coming through love and it's coming through concern. And me, the Dodi, the Dodi Li, this period of introspection, our days of closeness to Hashem, as a precursor to the days of judgment.
Oh, yeah. It does say, I need the Dodi, the Dodi. First it says, I am for my beloved, meaning that, I mean, I guess it could be another point for the month. That we first have to show Hashem that we are for Him, and then for the next year He'll be for us.
That's a good point. So you're saying we gotta take the first move. Hashem is waiting for us to make that move. And that is a very excellent point. Hashem is very generous as to how much of a move we have to make. And the Gemara has the following language. God says, if you open for me the eye of a needle, right? Look at a needle. It's a little eye, a tiny little eye of needle. That's where you put the thread through. Open for me the eye of a needle, and I will open for you as broad as the gateways of the temple. So Hashem is not saying we have to meet Him halfway, but we have to take a step. We have to take a step. And what you're saying is very good. And neither do I pledge myself to my beloved, and then God will give me everything that I need. Now, historically, and again, you may have heard all this, you may have learned all this already, but I'll go over it quickly. Historically, this period are called Yimei Ratzon, days of closeness to God. Because these were the 40 days that Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Moshe Rabbeinu came down on the 17th of Tamar. He went up on Mount Sinai, Shavuos. That's when we heard the Ten Commandments. 40 days later, he comes down and he sees the Jewish people worshiping the golden calf. So he smashes the tablets. That was on the 17th of Tammuz. That's why that's a fast day. And God wanted to destroy the Jewish people and make a new covenant with Moshe. And Moshe, out of his modesty and his greatness, says, I don't want any deals with you, Hashem. If you're not going to save them, what did Moshe say? Erase me from your book. I don't want to be around you. Imagine that. Hashem offered to make Moshe the Am Yisrael. Moshe said, no, I don't want it. And Moshe prayed and prayed and prayed. And finally, Hashem said, okay, I'm going to give them a second chance. And Moshe went up to Mount Sinai on the month of Rosh Chodesh Elul. And he got the second tablets. And let's count it. If you count 40 days from Rosh Chodesh Elul, 40 days Yom Kippur, he came down on Yom Kippur with the second tablet. Now, there is a chicken and egg question here. And again, it's not clear. That is, did Yom Kippur become a day of forgiveness because Moshe brought down the second tablets that signified that God forgave us? Or did God give him the second tablets on that day because Yom Kippur is a day of forgiveness? Meaning to say, is the giving of the Torah the reason for Yom Kippur becoming that day? Or is Yom Kippur the reason why he got the Torah then? But people don't realize this. People don't realize that one of the things that Yom Kippur commemorates is it was the day that Moshe came down from Mount Sinai with the second tablets that were not smashed. And that signifies Hashem's forgiveness for Am Yisrael. So starting from Rosh Chodesh Elul through Yom Kippur, these are days of reconciliation. The Hebrew term is Yemei Ratzon, days of closeness where God looks at us in a very pleasing and close manner. And of course, we started this morning, and although the mitzvah of blowing shofar is only on Rosh Hashanah, there's no mitzvah to blow shofar any other time, but you will have noticed that we started blowing the shofar today. Now, that is not the Orais, it's not a Torah commandment, it's not even a rabbinic commandment, but it is a very ancient custom. It is an ancient minhag. And the reason is, the shofar is our low-tech alarm clock, as the Rambam says, to waken us from our slumber, to make us think that we have to look at our lives, try to improve, and try, as you said, to be a mitzvah dodi, and then the dodi will, right? So this is a time of year where, you know, we think about how to do tshuva, how to improve ourselves, how to become closer to Hashem. But it's important at the same time not to get depressed, not to get fearful, not to get pessimistic, but to know that as difficult as this process is, and it is a difficult process, it is ultimately coming out of Hashem's love for us, that we can become better people and we can come closer to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Okay, so today we just discussed generally about Rosh Chodesh and specifically Rosh Chodesh Elul. Okay, so we'll see what...